Good morning and welcome to Jonesy, the show that brings you conversations with some of the most interesting people in the world of books, podcasts, radio, theater, music, and humor, guaranteed to entertain and enlighten. I'm the host of Jonesy, Ken Jones, no relation by the way. 99 years is a long time for people and orchestras, no matter how popular and well-established. So when one or the other reaches that milestone of longevity, it's cause for both astonishment and celebration. And that's what we'll be doing on today's show for a very popular local institution, the Portland Youth Philharmonic. Dating back to 1924, PYP is the longest-running youth orchestra in the country. It's been an invaluable resource for young musicians and their families, as well as thousands of concertgoers and music lovers throughout the decades. To help celebrate, we're fortunate to have David Hattner, PYP's musical director, here with us to talk about the orchestra's history, the season opening performance this Saturday at Portland's Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, and what's in store for season 99, which, by the way, wraps up in May of next year with a performance of Beethoven's Ninth. Over the past few years, I've probably interviewed David more than any other guest, and he's back with us again, which is a testament to his patience and generosity, two traits that no doubt serve him well when working with a rehearsal hall full of extremely gifted and talented teenage musicians. Please join us for our conversation with David, which is already in progress. David, welcome back. I always look forward to our conversations.
Thank you. Yeah, we've been apart for a few months since we ended last season, but here we are about to go again.
Yeah, and that was the end of season 98, I think, last May. This is season 99, a huge milestone. So maybe a little history is in order before we focus on this Saturday's performance, which we'll certainly get to. Can you take us back to those early days and PYP's first musical director, Jacques Gershkovich?
Well, my students might not realize I wasn't there.
right, 1924.
Yeah, even my parents weren't born yet in 1924. In fact, there were some things going on in Portland before that with a violin instructor named Mary Dodge, who founded the orchestra. She had been teaching at Irvington Elementary School and also had a large private violin studio and had what she called an advanced orchestra that rehearsed at her house. And she dreamed up an idea to have a junior symphony of a real full instrumentation symphony orchestra made up of young people with a professional conductor. Of course, in those days, there really wasn't such a thing as a female professional conductor. So she had to find someone. And about that time, a man named Jacques Gershkovich wound up in Portland. The entire story of how he got here actually isn't even known. But he had studied at the Imperial St. Petersburg Conservatory in Russia back before the revolution. And he was actually from Siberia. He was from Irkutsk. And although he didn't speak much English, he talked him into taking on this project. And he started in the fall of 1924. And by Valentine's Day of 1925, the orchestra was ready to play a concert, which it did, at what was then Lincoln High School. It's now Lincoln Hall at Portland State University. And the audience was so impressed that they formed a board of directors in this town with some very prominent wealthy citizens on it, and it made sure that the orchestra didn't have any shortcomings of anything. Mr. Gershkovich was given a very generous salary, and they set up a schedule of three concerts a year, and he stayed for 29 years as the conductor of the orchestra until he passed away in 1953. So it must have been very exciting, although they had struggled during the first year to fill all of the different chairs of the orchestra with all the right instruments. The quality of the performances were clearly of a high level, and it was obvious to everyone that they had found a miracle worker in Jacques Gershkovich. He just managed to get everything out of every musician.
And fortunately, the orchestra found another miracle worker after Gershkovich's passing in 1953. That was Jacob Avshalomov, known affectionately as Mr. A. He served as musical director for 40 years, very big years for PYP, six international tours to Europe and Asia. They had guest conductors, Leonard Bernstein and Aaron Copland among them.
You know, that's right.
Among the biggest names in classical music in history. And David, you knew him personally, and I know you have some wonderful memories. Can you talk a little about his influence on you, both as a musical director and personally?
Well, you know, I was pretty new still to conducting when I moved here, because most of my career in music before that was as a clarinetist. And I was exposed to some of his commercial recordings with the orchestra before I moved to Portland. They were available on LPs still, and I had a couple of them in my collection. And I listened to them carefully, and I was just amazed at how professional and accomplished they were with some complex contemporary repertoire. So I was very curious to hear what his methods were, and also, you know, as much as I could learn from someone who was accomplished in so many ways. He was an author. He was an expert on many things, including Persian rugs. And so it was just fascinating to go up to his house in the West Hills and listen to him talk and bring him to a rehearsal. He had not visited a rehearsal in a long time, and have him hear the orchestra and see how they're doing. And he's had an extraordinary memory also, especially for the names and faces of the thousands of musicians that he had taught over the years. Even when it had been decades, and obviously the musicians had changed in appearance quite a bit, he often recognized and remembered their names and what school they had attended and their parents' names and many things. In fact, I remember when my first year, when we brought him to rehearsal to talk to the orchestra, he hadn't addressed the orchestra in a long time. He spotted a violinist in my first violin section whose mother and grandmother had played in the orchestra. And on his way back off the podium, he said, "Oh, you look like your grandmother."
Amazing.
He was an extraordinary individual who was held in very high esteem by the musicians who played for him, and was very influential in many lives, musically speaking, of course, but in other ways as well. Really opened up a lot of avenues for people in a much less worldly era. You know, it's so easy today, remembering, like, we can find out what's going on in New York City in an instant and see pictures of anywhere at any time. But here was someone, for most of the students who had been born and grown up in Portland and barely seen anything, who had been born in China, who had been to all these countries and knew all these people and spoke so many languages. So it's a little humbling to follow such an extraordinary series of people, not just conductors. You probably know I was the first conductor of this orchestra to be born in this country.
Yes, we have Russia. Mr. A, too. Hugh Edwards was Wales, and yes. Mei-Ann Chen, Taiwan.
That's right. So I came the least distance, although I had not lived on the West Coast of the United States. So there was a lot of things to get used to. But he was an extraordinary person.
Now I just mentioned Hugh Edwards, who was from Wales originally. Mei-Ann Chen succeeded Hugh Edwards. And you came on in 2008. I looked up Mei-Ann Chen, and she's actually directing the Chicago Sinfonietta right now. Hugh Edwards, I think up until recently, was directing Olympia Symphony Orchestra. Did you get advice from them when you started?
Less when I started, but over the years, more. Especially Hugh and I have worked together more because he's so close. He came back in 2018 and conducted the orchestra in two pieces, one of which I was the soloist for, two pieces of English music. And he had a very interesting experience having to follow someone who was so legendary and had been around so long, and wanting to, push the orchestra in some new directions, and meeting resistance just because, you know, at that point, like, it seems like you've always done things a certain way. But he was so successful at galvanizing the orchestra and putting together some remarkable, ambitious projects in his 7 years here. So he definitely was highly appreciated and has some very loyal alumni. He's come back and conducted the alumni orchestra. And of course, we hope that to incorporate both Hugh and Mayan Chen into the 100th anniversary celebrations if we can manage their schedules to the right point. Mayan, of course, has a lively international conducting career and is, you know, busy on three continents, so she's hard to track down. But she was conducting at the Boston University Tanglewood Institute in Massachusetts this summer, and we had four PYP musicians in the orchestra, and she was so nice. She wrote and said, I could tell who the PYP musicians were on the first day. I could spot them by the way they distinguished themselves amongst some very fine young musicians. So that was nice to hear from her.
Yeah, very high praise. Speaking of high praise, you made your debut with PYP almost 14 years ago to the day, November 2008.
Yeah.
You couldn't have asked for a better review from the local paper, The Oregonian. I'm quoting, the Portland Youth Philharmonic roared like a Maserati on Saturday in its first concert under music director David Hattner. The route was challenging, the execution distinguished, and the ride delightful. I'm wondering about your memories of that night, David, if you had any nerves following the footsteps of those giants of classical music who preceded you.
I think I was too focused to be nervous about it. It was an exciting time. There were some things going on outside of music. My mother had passed away very recently, and that was just nobody loves you like your mom, and so that was just a tough time. But you know, the show must go on, and we were still figuring out how we were going to work together. The members of the orchestra were, of course, intensely loyal to Mayan Chen as very well they should have been. And so, again, anything different there's bound to be a little resistance. And of course, the program was a particularly ambitious one. It was half of three American pieces and Dvorak's Symphony No. 6, which is a good long show. And it was plenty complicated. But they played brilliantly. And I was very grateful to David Stabler for his support. We miss having a regular classical music writer in the Oregonian. It really helps all concerned, even if not all the reviews are as laudatory.
As glowing as that, right, yes.
As that one. David Stabler wrote about a few of our concerts over the years, and he always said very, very nice things. I don't remember him ever being too cruel to me, which is nice. But that was a lot of good memories from that year. It just seemed to go by in a blur, and before long there weren't any musicians left in the orchestra who had been in the organization before I started. And of course I conducted the alumni orchestra a few months later, and none of those alumni knew me at all. And now more than half of the alumni orchestra in any given year are folks that I worked with. So it's just changed so much.
Now, my wife actually brought up the next question, and this is coming from the parents of two sons who went through this. Musicians in PYP, most of them at least, are in their teens, very, very talented, definitely, but still teenagers. And that can be a period of growth and change, to put it mildly. What are some of the challenges for you that, say, musical director of the Oregon Symphony, David Dansmayer, doesn't have with the more mature, older musicians?
Well, Maestro Dansmayer knows who's going to be sitting in every chair a year from now, more or less. There, one or two musicians will retire. Two or three will win jobs in other orchestras and will be replaced by highly competent replacements who have been thoroughly vetted by an audition committee. So he never has to worry. It's like, oh, I'd like to play in 2 years, because they're planning 2 to 3 years in advance, this Mahler symphony or this world premiere or, some other piece that has a particularly difficult part for a certain instrument. And will there be anyone there to play? Of course there will. He never has to think about such a thing. He never has to worry about almost anything to do with having the quality of personnel that are going to be needed because of the structure of what he's trying to do. Or if he wants to play a certain concerto, will somebody be available to perform it? Well, of course someone will. There's a budget for that. So what we're in the business of doing is growing a whole garden, right? We're not important. This is really Portland's orchestra. The musicians all live here. they're obviously with their parents. And so if we need, looking down the road, we need trumpets or violas or bassoons, we have to find them and then make sure that they're trained to the level that they're able to handle whatever repertoire that we wish to play. So when I'm programming for the orchestra, I'm often thinking, well, last year we graduated all of two sections. I won't tell you which ones because I don't want you to be listening extra carefully or distracted by that at the concert. But, you know, when the whole section graduates and the replacement players may be very good, and in this case they are, but they're not solid on exactly what they have to do to be in this particular orchestra yet. It's very different from even our conservatory orchestra as an experience. You know, when I talked to the orchestra at the end of rehearsal, I said, you know, we're not a orchestra yet. We're still working on that. Especially those of you who are in your first year with the orchestra, you're almost on probation. you're doing the work, but until you've played a concert, a whole concert cycle, you don't really know what it's like yet. It's like some of you probably think it sounds great, and it does sound pretty good. But wait till you hear what the concert sounds like. It's going to be quite an experience for you, and I envy you that experience. So in a way, there's a certain exhilaration that comes from working with musicians who are playing everything for the first time. And we can play the repertoire that most orchestral musicians who are professionals are almost jaded by. They've played it so many times and it's very hard for them to find freshness in. But with student musicians, they have this natural enthusiasm. On the other side of it, when we play a world premiere, you know, there are some jaded professionals who will say, I didn't really study music for all those years. I want to play, you know, the stuff I studied in school. That's what I'm not here to play, this new stuff. whereas it doesn't matter to them. Everything is a premiere. So as you know, we have two world premieres on Saturday.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should get to the concert.
We'll get to that, but yeah, it's, you know, the organs, the main difference between what our organizations do is that the Oregon Symphony is a presenting organization. Its function and mission is to present content to the public. And that's what they're selling. Whereas really what PYP is selling is a process of education. And the audience and purchasers of that are our musicians. So the public audience that comes to the concert, they can enjoy the fruits of that process. But what we were designed to do was to create a process of creating an orchestra. And that's our product. The concerts are merely a recital of the results of that process. And therefore, it's not that we don't love our audience. It's just they're actually the second most important thing that we're marketing to. The musicians and their parents are the main thing that we are marketing to. So the Oregon Symphony doesn't have to think about that at all. Their musicians' parents are the problems of the musicians themselves.
Well, I got to say, as an audience member of many concerts in the past at PYP, I never felt neglected or in second place. So I want to get to the concert itself. So that's the opener of the season 99 at the Schnitzer this Saturday. The title is Autumn Variations, and we're in peak autumn now, so the timing's perfect. When planning the program, David, do you come up with the theme first, or do you have a few pieces already in mind and then look for what they have in common, what might tie them together?
It can be assembled in any number of ways. The title is generally thought up by multiple people. So in this case, because two of the works on the program are variations, that it seemed like a natural title. I'm trying to think how we
got the autumn in there.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how we put this program together. I guess it started when I was talking to our soloist, Llewellyn Sanchez-Werner, the pianist who soloed with our chamber orchestra, Camerata PYP, last May. He was playing a Mozart concerto with us, and we were talking about all the different pieces of repertoire that we were thinking of doing. And I had a work that a composer from Seattle, Bruce Stark, had given me before the pandemic for piano and string orchestra. And I really wanted to do it, but I did not have a pianist that felt they wanted to play it. So I brought it to one of the rehearsals and just said, yeah, why don't you have a look at this? And I didn't mean for him to read through it right then, but he did. And he thought it was great. He said, I'd love to do it. So I was, okay, so now I can build a program around this piece. as it turned out, I also had another submission, not a commission, by Farhad Pupel, a composer who was in Iran and living there at the time, who is now living in the United Kingdom. So I thought, well, let's do two world premieres. That'd be pretty neat. And then Llewellyn, his mother is from Mexico. So he said, I really want to play this Mexican piece that no one wants to do by Manuel Ponce called Balada Mexicana. So we decided, well, let's do two pieces with Llewellyn. We're bringing him out here. So then the original second half was going to be a symphony. But since we're now adding this piece by Ponce, I thought I better find something a little shorter. So I thought back to season number 90, and we did this Dvorak Symphonic Variations, which is a wonderful tour de force, and it's a 20-minute piece, perfect length. I was like, well, let's do it again. It's such a great piece, so challenging for the orchestra. So that's sort of how the program came together, just piece by piece. Everyone added a little something to it.
That's interesting, the Dvorak, because you had just mentioned that you played a sixth symphony in your debut as musical director back in November 2008.
I did, and I hadn't really, even at that time, I loved that symphony. And I did it actually again many years later. But the more of his music that I learn, and I've done quite a few of his pieces, and I've studied even more, I think he's really one of the most brilliant and lovable composers that we've ever had. And perhaps in terms of conducting, maybe my favorite, although it's hard to have a favorite, but this particular piece is as lovable as any of the pieces of his I've studied, I must say, although it's not as well known to the public for various reasons.
And I think as listeners have heard what's on the program, they get an idea of what I think is one of your trademarks, and that's this presenting a diversity of voices and cultures. You got Czech, you've got American, Iranian, Mexican music here, and mixing the old with the new, the world premieres with more war horses like Dvorak, and sometimes performing those newer pieces, the world premieres, for the first time anywhere. That seems to be something that you go for in almost every program.
Well, it's certainly truer this year, and has been evolving in that direction. When I was a student musician, which is several decades ago, most new music that was being put forth to the public was much more stridently intellectual in content, often written in the 12-tone language. If your listeners know what that is, it's not a particularly musical way of crafting music, but academics had sort of demanded that everyone learn it and try to use it, and I never found it that appealing, and most musicians didn't enjoy playing it. But we've gone back to a much more communicative style of composition, more reminiscent of what you would hear in a movie theater than what concert halls were putting forth all those years ago. And everyone is delighted by it. I think when we've played new music, our audiences have been almost as enthusiastic as when we play Beethoven, Brahms, Dvorak, and the like. So it's been very gratifying that these wonderful composers send their music to me. And in some cases, we commission it. But this year, between the Chamber Orchestra and the Philharmonic, we'll premiere six world premieres, which is, I don't know if it's a record for the orchestra in terms of concert seasons, but it's a lot. It's very hard work to learn these pieces that have no performance history. And, you know, you're still sort of looking through to make sure there aren't things that are incorrect in them and whatnot. But based on how the orchestra is taking to them, I think they love them very much, and the audience will hear that love in the sound that they make, which is great. And I can't wait to have Llewellyn fly in next week and start rehearsing with him, because we have very little time to assemble this. The Stark is really a concerto difficulty for the soloist, but it is an integrated work. The orchestra and pianist are equal partners, and we have a lot of work to do to assemble this piece and have it really like fit together, because there are wonderful effects in it that require the orchestra and solos to be absolutely unified. So I can't wait to hear what it sounds like, because no one has ever heard it played by anybody. And Bruce will be there, and Farhad will be coming over from the United Kingdom. He got his visa, so we'll have the composers in the hall, which it's always, I think it adds intensity to the entire audience's listening experience to know that their ears and the composer's ears are hearing the music for the first time. I think it's fantastic.
Now, usually talk a little to the audience to introduce the pieces. Will you be introducing the two composers, Farhad and Bruce?
Yes. I don't know if Farhad is going to talk. I'll have to talk to him and see what he wants to do. But after Farhad's piece, we'll need to move the piano into the soloist position, which will give us a few minutes of time. So I'm hoping Bruce will join me backstage, and we can talk through microphones, and he can talk a little about his piece. And Llewellyn said he might even be willing to join the conversation, you know, and actually break that wall before he even plays, which I think is just great. You know, I think that should be a direction soloists should go, is to be willing to talk to the audience before they play. Some, you know, it's like they're so nervous, and Llewellyn's not like that at all. And everyone should hear him, by the way. He's a truly capable pianist who can play the entire keyboard repertoire, but is also willing to give himself to just about any project, which is unusual. You know, a lot of pianists are giving their time to major competitions and, you know, Rachmaninoff concertos, which he's played all of those too. But he's, you know, we're talking about, you know, Manuel Ponce, and he's learned the Carlos Chavez piano concerto, which is a giant, difficult work that's that you're not going to have too many orchestras want to do, but he's learned it. So people should come embrace him and see if they can get perhaps the Oregon Symphony to bring him out to play that Chavez concerto. That would be very exciting for Portland. I'm sure they've never heard this piece.
Yeah, I looked up his credits. It's amazing. He's only 25 years old. And yeah. You mentioned contests. He hasn't neglected those. He was first prize winner of the 2022 Concert Artists Guild International Competition. And as you mentioned, David, he played with PYP's Chamber Orchestra, Camerata, just last May.
Yes, it was wonderful. That was our first Mozart piano concerto that we've done, and it was such a great experience for them and for me, and Llewellyn claims that it was for him as well. You know, we spent months rehearsing it before his arrival, and when he came, it's like, well, you know, like any soloist and conductor, we get together to have him play through it and sort of work out how is this going to work, or are his ideas compatible with what we've been doing. And he played through it, and I said, that's all of that is exactly what we're doing. We don't have to discuss anything. Let's just go play with the orchestra. It was, we were 100% sympathetic to each other's, and the orchestra listened to him and played back what he was playing, and we were able to perform it three times. So it was just great. So I'm hoping that next week will be as simple as that was to put together, although the pieces are very, very different. And that this sort of love affair between him and the musicians of the orchestra will continue indefinitely into the future. It's a great partnership, and we're just very lucky that someone of this stature is enjoying working with these students.
Now, David, the PYP concert this Saturday is the first in a series of four performances at the Schnitzer for season 99. I got to tell you, the first time I heard PYP was Beethoven's Fifth, and I was blown away. I became a lifelong fan. And you'll be doing, for the first time ever by PYP, I think, is Beethoven's Ninth in May, the closing concert of the season. So I'm very excited about that. Did you want to talk about some of the highlights coming up over the next few months going through May?
Yes. So for those concerts at the Schnitzer, the highlights are that on December 26th every year, we play a concert there with where you can meet the whole family, if you will. We have an alumni orchestra, all of the preparatory groups, Young String Ensemble or Portland Youth String Ensemble, it's called now, Wind Ensemble, Conservatory Orchestra, and PYP all play. And we'll give a world premiere then by Kenji Bunch, who is an alum of the orchestra and, of course, is a well-known musician around town with Fear No Music and many other things. So he is, we literally just got the piece this week. She Flies With Her Own Wings is its title, and it's a brilliant fanfare for orchestra of about 4 minutes. And we'll also celebrate the 125th anniversary of John Philip Sousa's The Stars and Stripes Forever at that concert. I think everyone will enjoy that very much. In March, in addition to a world premiere by the great Jeff Scott, the former horn player of the Imani Winds, who now is the professor at Oberlin Conservatory. He's written a new work for us, which the musicians will decide on the title as they rehearse it. They get to name it based on how they feel about it. So I'm excited to go through that process. And we'll give the American premiere of the Symphony No. 3 by the English composer Ruth Gipps, who will be a new name to most Portlanders. She's a wonderful symphonic composer, really one of England's great symphonic writers, sadly underappreciated during her lifetime. I just played her clarinet quintet a few weeks ago, and people just loved it. It's beautiful. And the symphony is ambitious and endlessly interesting, and I think people will love that. And then in May, as you said, we'll have the Portland Symphonic Choir and four wonderful local soloists who have all sung at many opera productions in town for the first PYP performance of Beethoven's Ninth.
In 99 years, huh?
Yes, that's true. And it has not gotten any easier in 99 years. It's a big, great big piece. And as I've told the orchestra, it's like, you know, you're playing well, but you're gonna have to work pretty hard to be ready for such a piece. You know, 60 some minutes of music, all of it's difficult, and it's just going to be a great experience for them. They'll never forget it.
I don't want to get too far ahead, David, but when I see season 99, I can't help think of the big 100. You already mentioned inviting back maybe some of your predecessors. Is there any other planning you can share with us now, or should we just wait till next year?
We have ambitious hopes. And the plans haven't completely coalesced yet, so I don't want to get us into trouble by revealing too much. But I do hope that all of Musical Portland will come out to celebrate this remarkable achievement by an organization that has given this city and thousands of young people who have lived in it something they can remember for the rest of their lives, that they can be proud to have been a part of. And understand that an organization like PYP, it cannot merely exist in an easy way. It is incredibly difficult to do what PYP does. It takes the combined efforts of hundreds of people to maintain such a standard of performance with personnel that turns over 100% every 5 years. And it's really one of the most impressive things that Portland does musically is to create and maintain this orchestra under various conductors and all kinds of different conditions in the music programs of the public schools and the private schools, to be able to continually do this. It's quite marvelous. And if Portland were a city of 10 million people, that would be one thing, but it's a city of about a million. It's not very big. Yeah, it's humbling to see these young people, how hard they work for this goal, considering how few of them pursue music professionally.
Now, David, where can listeners find out more about PYP Saturday's concert and purchase tickets if they like? You both have the in-person event at the Schnitzer, and then kind of coming out of the pandemic, a virtual event through live stream.
That's right. We will be live streaming. So those tickets for live streaming and for in-person can be found at our website, which is portlandyouthphil.org. So all the information about that concert series, as well as the two Camerata PYP concerts that we have this year, are all on various places on the website. But you can find that tickets button on there, and that will tell you everything you need to know. And you'll discover to your delight that among orchestra concerts, ours are by far the greatest bargain in the Pacific Northwest in terms of quality for your dollar.
Oh, I totally agree. Well, David, again, many thanks for joining us today, and wishing you a very happy 99th.
Thank you, Ken. I'll see you there.
Well, that's all for this episode of Jonesy here on KBOO Community Radio. If you missed any part of the show, would like to hear the longer, unexpurgated version, the director's cut, you might call it if we had a director, you can listen anytime on demand at kboo.fm/program/Jonesy, J-O-N-E-S-Y, or just search for it on the KBOO website. Before we head out the door, a big thank you to our guest today, David Hattner, musical director of the Portland Youth Philharmonic, which is now in its 99th year. PYP will be opening this historic season on Saturday at Portland's Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. You can find out more about the concert, all PYP events, and purchase tickets if you like, online at PortlandYouthPhil.com. Just to note that KBOO is your community radio station, and we get over 80% of our funding from our members. To support the station and programming like this, there's no better time to become a member yourself or renew your membership. Just go to kboo.fm and click on the big donate button. All of us here at the station, even Jonesy himself, that ingrate, thank you for that. Jonesy, by the way, comes to you every other week on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month from 11 to 11:30 a.m. We'll be preempted on Thanksgiving, Thursday the 24th, for special programming, but you could tune in for our next show on December 8th at 11 a.m. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation, saying, hope to see you all again then.